In New York, starting in 1932, with offices on East 10th Street, the Photo League had a mission to gather and support photographers who took realistic pictures that might someday bring about social change. Of course, if you were a photographer pretty much anywhere in New York in the 1930s and 40s, there was never any shortage of photo-worthy subjects, remembers photographer Rebecca Lepkoff.
When I went outside of my house, my little tenement house, the streets were lively with people. People used to go out in the streets, have conversations, sit on the stoop, meet their friends, and the kids would play stickball right in the middle of the street. And the cars would stop, wait until they get themselves out of the way. They would spin tops and play jacks, and the girls would jump rope and sing the songs.
Seems incredible, but then it was still a relatively new idea to take photographs of real people at all.
The camera was very unusual on the streets, especially a woman with the camera. They figured she must be a little bit weird.
Great photographers like Alfred Stieglitz and Louis Hine had blazed a trail in this direction. They departed from the idea that photographs should look like beautiful paintings. Their photos may have been beautiful, but they documented real life and, in some cases, real injustices with their cameras. And photographer teachers like Walter Rosenblum and Sid Grossman followed in their footsteps. You'd have to call it a movement in the photographic world. And people joined for personal, social, and other reasons. Photographer and League member Vivian Cherry was a dancer, but one day she hurt her knee and needed to look for other work.
And I went into an employment agency and I saw a sign that said, "Contact printer will train." But what interested me was the "will train," because I hadn't the vaguest notion of what a contact printer was. So that's how I got into a darkroom.
During World War II, young men were in short supply, so quite a few women found themselves in the male-dominated photography world. Ida Wyman started in the mailroom at Acme News Pictures in 1943.
I was their first girl mailroom boy.
Wyman and her husband, also a photographer, joined the Photo League together.
I always had the camera around my neck, and I was very shy. So having a camera was great. It was a great icebreaker.
For Wyman, knowing what to shoot was simple.
Something makes you feel good inside. It's like it comes together and you feel, I'm going to get a good picture. Now, sometimes that's totally true. And other times, you know, it didn't quite make it.
Once in the league, you paid a membership fee and could use the offices. And the darkroom, you could find out about photographic events, meet colleagues, take classes.
People were so good to each other, and anytime you needed help or you didn't have some chemical, or if you didn't have any money, it didn't matter.
It was a place for people to share ideas and see each other's work.
You know, it was a very mind-stretching kind of place. I was learning, I was seeing new things, so for me it was an eye-opener.
And other photographers came to see what was happening because it was an organization that really was breaking through in photo history.
So many of the people, Ansel Adams, Edward Weston, so many of the names that are really very large in photographic history, all were involved.
In Marvin Newman's case, it was Walter Rosenblum who helped awaken something in him.
He said, well, go into your own neighborhoods and really start to photograph and see with an open eye just exactly what was going on.
Newman says it was also a function of the era. Many of the League members had lived through the Great Depression and felt they wanted to change things any way they could.
What they were trying to do is, within the power of their art, which was photography, they thought that they could improve the country.
One thing to note about the Photo League was that there were those who were shooting photos to make a statement, and others who just loved to shoot pictures of the streets and inside the shoemaker's shops and playgrounds of New York. The other thing to note is what happened to the League after the war in 1947. Their number came up on the lists of what were then called Communist Front organizations, recalls Vivian Cherry.
They were called in before the Un-American Activities Committee, yeah. But then, you know, there's a lot of red baiting in all the industries.
It was a big blow when that happened.
Some employers demanded their photographers for hire sign loyalty oaths to the U.S. In defiance, nobody signed.
But it was very upsetting because if they didn't sign, they didn't work.
The Photo League was dissolved in 1951, unable to recover from the accusations.
There were three or four photographers that were in the Photo League who were outstanding war photographers in the Second World War. I don't know how patriotic you have to be, but Rosenblum, Gene Smith, Morris Engel, they all were great war photographers. And when you speak about patriotic duty, I don't know how much more patriotic you can be when you go into a battle with a camera in front of your eye instead of a gun.
Since then, the pendulum has swung, as does tend to happen.
For many years, people were afraid of, and this was true, they were very afraid to have any affiliation with the Photo League. But as the years went by and the Photo League was a badge of honor, a lot of these people started to say that they had been in the Photo League.
They said they were in it, whether they were or not.
Well, if you live long enough, things will change and things will happen.
Oddly enough, the Photo League was to some degree a league of loners. You could be living the photographer's life out there in the streets, but with a support system.
It is lonely to become a photographer, but I like that loneliness. This way I'm happy going into the streets, and I do it all by myself, and I like it.
Sweet memories of a time when taking a picture could be a personal moment and a radical act. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkill.